Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased you are all here with me today. We've got another wonderful show in store for you with a wonderful guest, another returning guest. I'm looking forward to bringing him on shortly. But first, of course, we have our blog post from a couple of years ago. And this one, I think it's actually a pretty apropos blog post for our guest today. And the title of our blog post for today is Coincidence and Serendipity Are the Magic of Life. There are these little moments in life that are important. We often don't recognize they're significant, for we pass by them without a second thought. And when we do miss them, we miss a great opportunity. Sometimes they can be subtle and quiet, so they are easy to miss. Other times they are profound, so profound that we cannot help but pay attention. These synchronicities and coincidences can occur in our everyday life. Like a phone call from a friend we were just thinking about, or a chance meeting of someone who can take our life in a different direction. To truly take advantage of these important events in our lives, we can cultivate a mindset of openness and awareness about them. So when a coincidence or a serendipitous event happens, we can take a moment and reflect on its possible meaning. Which way are we to turn? Do I follow this opportunity or pass it by? We can ask ourselves what it might be presenting to us. Reflecting on these moments can help us gain insights and make connections that we might have otherwise missed. Coincidences and serendipitous events often come with a sense or feeling. Our intuition or our gut may be telling us something important. When we learn to trust our instincts and follow our intuition, we can decide to act on these events more consciously. Yet we need to remember that synchronicities are not commands. It is essential to use both our mind and our intuition to decide on the best course of action. We can use coincidences and serendipity to learn to thrive in the realm of uncertainty. Instead of fearing the unknown, we can learn to embrace it by allowing ourselves to step outside our comfort zone and explore new possibilities. By embracing this uncertainty, we can open up to a world of new potentials and new connections. They can often bring us together with strangers in unexpected ways. Sometimes we can decide to use these events as opportunities to connect with others who share our similar experience. We can engage in conversations, join communities, or even consider investigating the patterns to connect with other like-minded people. Remember, we are all unique, but we can find common ground through the coincidences we share. As we cultivate a mindset that welcomes and embraces the magic of coincidence and serendipity, we will begin to see that magic is all around us. For when we keep an open mind, trust our intuition, and are ready to seize what opportunities come our way, life can bring us real magic. And who knows what wonderful experiences and connections await us on this path. So I wrote this a couple of years ago. It was kind of two things that sort of brought this up. The first was I had this, you know, interesting connection where I was doing a little ceremony around a retreat for the Evolutionary Business Council in San Diego a couple of years ago. And one of the gentlemen involved with the organization who was kind of helping to run the tech and stuff, he connected me to somebody who he thought might be interested in the ceremony. And it turned out that she was already committed and doing something else that same weekend. But she was helping me to try and find a place to host it. And in the end, we couldn't find a place. We ended up doing it at her house. And so one of my friends who was attending the ceremony, who lives in Encinitas, you know, a little bit north of La Jolla, where her place is, I asked him to kind of help with bringing pads over and helping to set up the space and stuff. And it turns out she actually knew him. So there was a connection there, which was kind of funny. And actually, it was kind of funny. They ended up going out after a while, after they reconnected from that. And then that was in April. And then the summertime, I got a connection from a woman who facilitates in the same lineage that I do from Florida. And she was like, oh, I have this woman. She wants to work with a facilitator. She comes up north during the summer. I work with her in the wintertime. Let me connect you to her. I'm like, okay, great. And so I set up a time to talk to her. And then the woman who hosted me in San Diego was like, oh, you know, during that weekend that I was at that other ceremony, I met this woman also from the same place, Southampton, who's also looking to work with someone. So let me connect you to them. And I thought, wow, this is great. Two connections in Southampton. Who'd ever thought? But then it turned out it was the same woman. And that to me was just so funny that two different people connected me to the exact same person right around the same time. And she ended up hosting us. We've done several ceremonies at her beautiful home in Southampton, and we're still working together to this day. And so that whole incident kind of, you know, brought to my mind this whole idea of sort of this coincidence and serendipity. But then I was talking to somebody who was someone I work with in my community, and they were telling me about all these coincidences and you know, how the universe was, quote unquote, showing them they had to do this or they had to do that. And so when I hear language like, oh, it's telling me I have to do this, I always take a step back and I want to reconsider it for a moment, because I don't believe that the universe as it ever tells us we have to do something, maybe in very extreme circumstances, but not in general, because we have free will. It's always our choice to do it or not. And so that kind of brought up to me, and I felt it was important to talk about how often we think like coincidences are like a command from the universe that we should do something. And I always kind of feel like, no, it might be a suggestion. It's something to pay attention to, but that doesn't mean we have to do it. And it's so funny because I even recently had a conversation with a friend who was talking about, oh, there were all these coincidences and I connected with this guy and he does these retreats and going to Egypt. And I just feel so called to it and this and that. And I'm like, oh, really? Like, how much does that retreat cost? And it was like, I don't know, some ridiculous amount of money, $10,000, $15,000. And I was just like, and knowing this person and knowing their situation, I was like, well, you know, I mean, that sounds really nice, but couldn't you really put that money towards something else that would really be more beneficial to you? And she stopped and she thought about it for a moment. And she was like, yeah, that's true. I could use it for this, or I could use it for that, or I could use it for, you know, several things. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, it's nice, but just consider for a moment that just because there's a coincidence, just because, you know, something like that happens, doesn't mean that you have to do it. And so she thought about it for a minute, and we talked about it a little bit more, and she kind of agreed with me. And so it really, I kind of, and I don't think I've ever really talked about this in this particular manner, that just because there's a serendipitous event, just because there's a connection, unusual, and there's a serendipity and this coincidence, again, not that we shouldn't pay attention to it, but the meaning we make from it, the interpretation we make from it is always influenced by our history, our past, and who we are, and our judgment. And so these coincidences are not commands, I feel, and purely my opinion, are not commands from God or the universe that you have to do this. I think of them more as suggestions. I think of them more as like opening opportunities, as a little nudge in a direction that we have agency to decide whether we should or shouldn't go in that direction. Because sometimes that little nudge might not be about actually making the decision to go to something or do something, but it might be a little wake-up call to practice discernment of how, you know, you normally go to something like this, but you want to look at this and see, like, sometimes it doesn't always serve you in the moment. It doesn't always have to be a command. It can be a lesson. There can be so many different lessons to learn from it that it's not just a one opportunity, one way to move forward. However, it is something to pay attention to. It is something to listen to. Just not always the way we think. And so I felt like this topic deserved a little discussion, a little highlighting, just so that we could think about it, just so that we don't fall into this trap of automatically assuming that just because something is presented to us, like, this is it. This is where to go. This is what to do. This is, you know, our next step. So maybe you agree with me. Maybe you don't. I'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to email me at sam@theconsciousconsultant.com. Let me know how you feel about it. Again, the title of this blog post is Coincidence and Serendipity Are the Magic of Life. And you can always find my blogs on theconsciousconsultant.com, and of course on the radio station's website at talkradio.nyc/blog. All right, now It is my extreme pleasure to welcome back to the show Ralph White, a true pioneer in holistic education and a guiding light in the esoteric and consciousness movements. Ralph was the visionary co-founder of the New York Open Center, which served for nearly four decades as one of New York City's primary hubs for holistic learning, spiritual exploration, and transformative education. Now, as director and president of the new Center for Holistic Learning, Ralph continues this rich legacy, ushering in a new chapter for seekers, healers, and wisdom keepers alike. Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Ralph.
Thanks very much, Sam. Great to be here.
It's wonderful to have
you. I appreciated what you said there. That was great. I thought that was right on. Yeah.
Really, really. Yeah, it's kind of funny how I'm just taking these blog posts in order, yet somehow they always seem to be so apropos for...
Well, here's another synchronicity. In a little over a month's time, I'm going to be in the retreat center of Eranos on Lago Maggiore in Switzerland, which is where Carl Jung developed the whole notion of synchronicity. Of course, Carl Jung, the great psychologist.
Oh, yes.
So, I'm thinking a lot about synchronicity and Jung right now. And to be in the very place where he met with so many of the luminaries of the mid-19th century is going to be a real privilege. So, yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Oh, my God. I'm so jealous. I wish I could join you. Unfortunately, it's not where life is right now for me. You know what? We need to take a quick break. Rather than get started and interrupt, let me take the break now. When we come back, let's start off talking about like what got you initially just on this whole path, and we'll kind of just highlight some of the points along the way and get up to the present, okay?
Okay, sure.
Wonderful. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And we'll be right back with our guest, Ralph White, in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Ralph White, co-founder of the New York Open Center and director and president of the New Center for Holistic Learning. So Ralph, you're like me. You've been around the block a few times. You've been here. What initially got you started in this whole crazy world of esoteric learning and spiritual endeavors?
Well, I would say the spiritual turning point for me was a trip I took down Route 66 way back when. I first came, you know, I'm British, so I first came to America as a graduate student. So when I was 21, I was in Chicago and I answered an ad for a co-driver to LA down Route 66. So of course, I always wanted to drive Route 66. Mm. And it was in the deserts of New Mexico, Arizona, the silence, the great stars overhead, the beauty, the vastness of the landscape, that it triggered some kind of awakening in me. And then, yes, it was a whole month-long journey in the beauty of the West. And that really launched me, and then that launched me into a whole series of deep reading and so on. So I would say that was the turning point that woke me up, or should we say alerted me to the spiritual dimension of reality. You know, growing up, I was not particularly spiritual-oriented. I didn't grow up in a religious family. I was very aware of the wars and the Holocaust and all the horrible things that happened in the 20th century. You know, how could there be anything? How could there be a deeper spiritual reality? But with all those things happening, but then I had that inner awakening, and that's what launched me onto the path of deep spiritual and later holistic interests.
So it's really kind of nature awoken something deeper within you, it sounds like.
Yes, I think, you know, I was 21. I think inwardly I was ready to have that change. And I've always been, I'm a bit of a nature mystic, even though I've lived in New York City for years. But yes, coming from Europe, you know, the size, the scope, the vastness, just the Native American dimension was extraordinary, you know. And then 50 years later, or 40 years later, when I did my DNA, I find out I'm 15% Native American from Mexico, or Native Mexican, should we say, from the Zacatecas.
Wow, really?
Well, it was my biological grandfather, who I never met. My mother was adopted. She was born in Ireland, but it was all a bit of a mystery about where she came from. Anyway, I was amazed. That was an extraordinary discovery. But yeah, that's what was the spiritual turning point in my life.
Wow. And how did you come to co-found the Open Center? Because the Open Center for so many years was really one of the premier centers for metaphysical learning here in New York. So many of them, like the Open Center, have closed down since, you know, over the last 10 years, 20 years. But the Open Center had been around for a long time.
Well, it was another synchronicity, appropriately enough. Before I did the Open Center, I was program director of Omega Institute, you know, Omega Institute upstate. There was a synchronicity too, but I won't go into that one. And, you know, it was the very beginning. Omega was sort of a rundown, abandoned old family camp that had been empty for 10 years. And it was a mess. So we had a lot of work to do. And I went down to the lake one day, those of you who know Omega, and there was a guy I recognized from Findhorn. I had lived at Findhorn, you know, the Echo Village and alternative community in northern Scotland. It was an Australian bloke I had met at Findhorn years earlier and hadn't seen. And it's like, what are you doing here? And so he invited me to dinner at his place. He was living in Millbrook. And then he told me about this guy, Walter Beebe, in New York, who was part of a small group of people who wanted to start something in the city, and suggested I meet with him. And so, to cut a long story short, Walter and I met. It was the only Christmas Day I ever worked on. Christmas Day 1982, was that? We decided to work together. You know, we were a good combination of talents. He was actually a lawyer and knew about real estate and creating nonprofits and all of that. And I had some resources. And of course, you know, I knew about the world of creative programming and so on from being at Omega and Findhorn before that. So we were a good combo. So that's what it got. That's what got it going. And then, well, we launched in January of 1984.
Right. And did you ever expect it to end up being as influential as it ended up being in its heyday?
Well, I hoped. I certainly hoped it would, you know, but it's always a wild gamble. You don't know these things. There's no guarantee. You're not joining some big corporation. I was doing it because I was committed to the same kind of values and vision that you have here on the show, you know, awakening humanity, the spiritual development, the need to move towards a more holistic and ecological worldview. I would say that would have been my hope. But it exceeded my my highest ambitions, I would say, if ambition's the wrong word, highest hopes.
And what would you say was the real turning point for the Open Center where you felt like, wow, we've really achieved something? We've really like stepped into our fullness and people really see it now.
Well, I can remember one evening, maybe sometime in the 80s. Some of your listeners may remember the original Open Center building, which was on Spring Street in Soho, downtown Manhattan, for those who don't know you, in New York. And I remember coming out of the building once and standing on the other side of the street when Spring Street in the 80s was very run down. It was dark. Mm-hmm. It was empty. And just looking at what was going on, I think we had some kind of music concert going on. Was it? Yes, it was a wonderful sort of spiritual jazz going on up on the third floor. We had another program. Was it a Jungian program on another? We were covering the whole spectrum of the art, spirituality, consciousness, psychology, the body in one evening. You know, we saw Friday evenings, we used to do three simultaneous events. And I just thought, wow, this is really working. This is taking off and it's covering all the aspects of human, well, not all, but a good number of dimensions of human experience that I wanted it to. So I think that if I had to look at a moment, I can remember having that feeling, just standing on the other side of Spring Street, looking back at the Open Center building at 83 Spring Street and seeing it alive and vibrant and doing good work on all of those levels. So that would be the moment if I had to choose one.
Beautiful, beautiful. And what kind of happened towards the end? Like what sort of, you know, caused the Open Center to close its doors? Was it the pandemic or were there other factors?
I think that played a role. But no, I would say after going for 38 years, its relational and organizational structure were no longer able to really serve as a vehicle for this kind of work. Its own internal karma, should we say, had evolved. And, you know, organizations have beginnings, middle, and ends. And it wasn't that the work was finished. It was that the Open Center itself, with its own internal issues, was no longer able to continue it. So we had to create something new.
Okay. And so, I mean, after the Open Center, again, 38 years is a long time to work on something. After that, did you ever think you would do another holistic learning center?
I remember thinking, you know, well, I had that same perspective that I just articulated. That it's not that this work is over, that we don't need these programs. It's just that the Open Center's internal karma brought it to an end. So I remember feeling, yes, let's give it a try. Let's see if we can continue this work, but in a different mode. For instance, the new center is not operating out of one building. You know, we do online stuff. We do hybrid things. We use various spaces in Manhattan. And I think the need for a more holistic ecological consciousness is as if not more necessary than ever.
Absolutely.
But we're living in different times, and of course, you know, after the one of the virtues, if there was a virtue to the pandemic, was that we all got into Zoom and we got into online programs. And so now with various programs, when we did them purely in person, let's say an Art of Dying training and holistic practice to thanatology, we have to fly people in for, you know, 6 weekends, and people have to come into New York. As soon as we took it online, it quadrupled in registration. So, of course, now I think we've had our fill of a lot of that. We want a mix now. It's a hybrid. But I think, you know, there are new possibilities now.
We just got a minute or so before break, but I'm curious. Did you ever feel once you started the new center that this was still a labor of love, or was there any like old baggage from the open center? It's like, oh, here we go again. All right. And, you know, steel yourself up. Were you able to approach it with enthusiasm, or was it more like, no, this is just something we have to do?
I'd say it's a bit of both, really.
A bit of both.
You know, I did feel a sense of we should at least make a good effort to continue this work, even in a somewhat different form. Mm. But there was another part of me that thought, oh, my God. I started working on the Open Center in 1983. I did Omega in, you know, what was that, 1980 or 81 or something. And I've been doing this a long time. You know, I thought I'd be involved with other things. But, yes, I'd say it was a mix.
Yeah. I imagine so. I mean, the longest I've ever done anything is what I'm doing right now, which is working with the radio station, which has been a little over 15 years now. And I've never done anything for full 15 years, except maybe being married. And just like the idea after 38 years of then starting something new, but sort of a continuation of what I'd be doing before, I'd be like, oh. You know, it'd feel a little heavy.
Well, I can't say that. I'm devoid of some of those
things. Yeah, I imagine.
I did a long-distance cross-country runner, so I've always had a lot of stamina. Keep on trucking, yeah.
Got it.
But, of course, it's also, you know, the nourishment you get from this work is that
yes.
it changes people's lives for the better.
Yeah.
So that's what gives back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the people you meet and the connections you make.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about sort of what's the difference maybe between the new center and the open center, besides just the delivery mechanism. And like, do you see that people need things different than before? Like, is there a different calling? Is there a different desire to learn different things than before? So we'll get into all of that right after our break. Okay, Ralph?
Okay, sure.
Wonderful. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back with our guest, Ralph White, in just a moment.
Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A-Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A-Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So, Ralph, what would you say is the difference today in what people are looking for in terms of what they're looking to learn, what they're looking to experience compared to when you started the Open Center?
Yeah, well, you know, you look back 40 years ago and a lot of this stuff that is now integrated into the mainstream was not there. I mean, I look back, it used to be that meditation was considered a fancy word for sleep. You know? The New York Times was publishing op-eds dismissing every form of alternative medicine as snake oil. Mm-hmm. And this kind of thing. And there were concerns that any kind of opening to the mystical dimension would lead the doorway to fascism and nonsense like this. When I was living in the north of Scotland, we were getting windmills and solar panels in the 70s. That was considered totally outrageous.
Wow.
Of course, it's crucial to the development of humanity. And if you've been to China, you say, oh my God, look at the way the Chinese are getting into alternative sources of energy. So much, you know. As you'll remember, the original health food stores were little mom and pop operations, hole in the walls. Mm-hmm. Then they became Whole Foods, and then Whole Foods was bought by Amazon and so on and so forth. So, you know, natural foods, complementary medicine, meditation, emotional intelligence, all of these things have become integrated into the culture. So you can say that in a way, the whatever it was, 400,000 or 500,000 people that came through, or participants that came through the Open Center, it's had its impact. And you know, it's not a big story and a dramatic story that the media is going to write about, but it's been a subtle evolution. So these are different times. You know, we used to have Daniel Goleman, you know, the real creator of the concept of emotional intelligence. He was our first mindfulness meditation teacher and so on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, on the other hand, things are coming back in a different turn of the wheel. You know, I was just looking at an old video of Robert Bly. Do you remember Robert Bly, the great poet?
Yes.
He did a lot of that pioneering work. It was men's work. I know him through the poetic side, really. But, you know, now we're having a resurgence of interest in masculinity. What is healthy masculinity? And we're looking at doing some programs around that. So that hasn't gone away. To move past the old, you know, macho, hardcore male attitudes that probably you and I probably grew up with.
I'm curious because you mentioned before about your work with death and dying, and I've seen it more just in general that as the population ages, you know, this huge percentage of people who are the baby boomers, you know, are now older. Is there much more interest in the whole topic of death and dying today than there used to be? Or is it still something that people, you know, kind of like, no, we don't want to talk about that until we have to?
No, I think it's made an enormous stride. You know, we first did the Art of Dying conferences, holistic spiritual and practical approaches to living and dying. We partnered with Tibet House literally 30 years ago, 1995. I know that has come a long way since. I was just talking yesterday with an elder, the International Association of Death Doulas. You know, doulas are just normally a birth doulas who are there to help the mother at birth or the midwife. Now we have death doulas. Something like that has really permeated the culture. And you're getting more and more people training in that now. The Open Center taught a death doula training for 10 years with a guy called Henry Fusco Weiss. And even now, the Inelda people, the death doula people, were telling me that there's now a health organization in Florida, quite a major outlet for these issues, that is now incorporating doula work into what it offers, as along as the whole other pantheon of medical offerings that it provides. So, no, this is definitely not going away. It may be related to the fact that we're getting older, but it's not so much people themselves. You know, even though when we did some of those 900-person conferences, it would be a handful of people or less who were actually dying themselves. It's mostly professionals or semi-professionals who work in the dying field, and that is definitely growing. It's growing in many, many places. We just did a weekend what was that, a couple of months ago, on the use of psychedelics in end-of-life care. So we had my friend Tony Bosses, who was the principal investigator at NYU in the use of psilocybin with stage four cancer patients, dealing with a lot of things, you know, that come with that, depression, fear of death, etc. In terms of the science, it's one of the many scientific experiments going on.
You know, that's actually a topic around. I've had many people come on to talk about psychedelics, but I haven't talked about the end of life aspect.
Tony told me that the science around that is the, of all the different research, addiction, etc., depression, the most impressive science, I'm told, is around the effect of people dealing with dying. So, yeah, that's a real growing field, and there's some wonderful work going on there.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. So there's this esoteric conference you've been running for a bunch of years.
30 years.
30 years.
I can't believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what goes on in this conference? What are you going to be talking about this year?
Well, this year is called An Esoteric Quest for the Mountain of Truth. You might wonder where the Mountain of Truth is, the Himalayas or maybe the Andes. No, actually, the Mountain of Truth is in the foothills of the Alps. It refers to a place called Monte Verita. Now, this is where the counterculture was born in 1901. We think, you know, most of us, especially Americans, think that the counterculture was born in California in the 60s or maybe Greenwich Village in the 1920s or something. But actually, it began on the shores of Lago Maggiore in 1901 when the spiritual rebels of Europe, who were seeking to escape what Max Weber, the sociologist, described as the iron cage of thinking dominating in Europe at that time, you know, materialism, nationalism, all the things pointing towards the horror of the First World War. People were rejecting that. Women were breaking out of, you know, the rigidity and repression of the Victorian age into their own liberation. People were going back to nature. So this place, Monte Verita, this pioneering colony, that's where it all began, and it flourished between, you know, 1900 and 1901 and about 1925. We think, like, if you think of people like Hermann Hesse, Steppenwolf, The Journey to the East, Siddhartha, and so on. Hermann Hesse was probably one of the best-known people in the West, or rather the English-speaking world that we know. Isadora Duncan, you know, the great dancer.
Oh, yes.
Is there. People who know about body work and dance would know Rudolf Laban. But it's amazing to look at images from that time. Oh, eyes with long hair. They had even natural fabric clothes. They didn't want to wear the uptight, creased, starch clothes. There's a long tradition of Celtic spirituality there too. So it's amazing to look at that, men and women dancing naked together. That would have been wild in 1963, let alone 1903. So that's what this is about. We've been doing it for 30 years now. We've covered a lot from the ancient world, antiquity, the ancient Greek mysteries, the whole world of ancient Alexandria. But I wanted to bring it up to the 20th century because, as my friend Yuri Stoyanov, the author of that great book, The Hidden Tradition in Europe, says, the old medieval gnosis, the old medieval holy sacred wisdom embodied by people like the Cathars, maybe people have heard of the Cathars in the south of France. There was a terrible crusade organized against them. But they died out right in this area at the end of the Middle Ages. So you could say the medieval gnosis or the medieval sacred wisdom was extinguished through the Inquisition and things like that right in that area. And it was reborn again in the same place 500 or 600 years later. So that is a sweet... It's a sweet prospect. So, that's what we're going to start off, you know, as I mentioned earlier. The first part will be in the retreat center of Eranos, which some people would have heard of, the Eranos. Carl Jung was there. He sort of presided. He was the predominant person there. It hasn't changed since the 1940s. You walk in there, And, you know, you could imagine Jung himself just sitting right there at his desk with his pipe and his mustache. And, you know, the library, it's all leather-bound volumes from wall to ceiling. And you can see the big green table where he would meet with people like D.T. Suzuki. Even Joseph Campbell, I believe, was there in terms of people we know about. So we're going to start off there, attuning to that particular realm. It's you know, those were the people who really pioneered holistic, mythological, etc. thinking, while the rest of the world was caught in either, you know, existentialism or logical positivism or some of those dead end worldviews. So that's where we're going to start off. And then we go to Monte Verita, but then we're going to wind up going into the Alps, and we're going to conclude the journey at Rudolf Steiner's Goetheanum. And some of us, you know, people who know Rudolf, people think of Steiner today as the founder of biodynamic agriculture, which is now worldwide. You know, it was really the rebirth of organic agriculture in the 1920s that Steiner pioneered. Or they think of him in reference to the Waldorf schools, you know, now the world's largest independent approach to education, holistic education, head, heart, and hands for kids. But in fact, he was a tremendous spiritual and esoteric teacher of the highest order.
Yes.
And he gave 6,000 lectures. And phenomenally. And there's this great building outside Basel in Switzerland, the north of Switzerland. We're going to start in the south and wind up in the north of Switzerland. Called the Goetheanum, done in honor of Goethe, you know, the great, great German writer, poet, scientist, and statesman, etc. So that's where we're going to be. So we're going to start off with Jung. To me, the great, or certainly one of the great psychotherapists of the 20th century, healers of the soul. And we're going to wind up with Rudolf Steiner, one of the certainly one of the great spiritual philosophers of the 20th century.
Wonderful, wonderful. Does the New Center have any courses on Steiner? Because his work is just so profound.
Yes, yes. We're actually co-sponsoring a program with the Anthroposophical Society in September. We're going to, I will be there with, some of us may know, Daniel Pinchbeck.
Yes.
You know, Daniel. So Daniel is into Steiner. He's one of the few people in the sort of post-psychedelic world who really understand the importance of Steiner. So with Daniel and his Liminal News and the Society and the New Center, we're going to be doing a three-part series on Steiner starting in September.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, I've had Daniel on my show. I follow his blog posts and I see all his analysis of Steiner's work and how it relates to what's going on today. I find it quite fascinating. So if I can, I'll try and make it. I have a busy September, but I'll see if I can make that. All right, we're going to take a last break of the show. When we come back, my last two questions for you.
Okay.
What challenges are you facing today? And and what does the future hold for Ralph White?
All right.
So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. And we'll be right back with my guest, Ralph White, in just a moment.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your Conscious Consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Ready to serve up success with a splash? Hi, I'm Bruce Kramer, a.k.a. the Corporate Cockroach.
I'm the Renaissance Woman, Angie Snowball.
And I'm your strategy doctor, Dr. Navtej Dasanjh, inviting you to serving up success with a splash.
Join us as we shake things up with real talk and real strategies centered around awareness, action, and accountability.
And yes, there really is a cocktail involved. Please join us and sip your way to success.
Serving up success with a splash, where wisdom meets happy hours. Cheers!
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So, Ralph, I mean, you have so much experience between FinHorn, Omega Center, Open Center. Are there any challenges around working with the new center?
Oh, definitely. Plenty of challenges. Funding, of course, is always a challenge. That's always the biggest one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Attuning to how things have changed and what people are interested in, as opposed to, because so much is mainstream now, and what was pioneering 30 or 40 years ago. And we're not operating out of an office, so that we don't see each other every day with the kind of chemistry that happens there.
Yeah.
And we're doing it all on Zoom, but of course we're having events in person and online. So yeah, I would say all of those are challenges, and we're living in difficult times.
Yeah,
there's a lot of regressive forces at work in this world that can be very discouraging and depressing to people.
Yeah,
and yeah, so I would say those are some of the challenges. And for me, of course, there's part of me, look, I've been doing this a long time. I want to continue this work, but I also want to do something different and new as well.
Mm.
So how to make those things work simultaneously is that's something I'm really thinking about. I liked your ad there, the people who were mixing wisdom with happy hour. I'm half Irish, so that's I'm down.
Yeah, that's one of our fun new shows. So I guess that brings me to my second question, which is, what does the future hold for Ralph? Is there anything new and interesting?
What I'm wanting to do in the new year is I really would like to start a podcast.
Okay.
Or a YouTube podcast kind of thing. During the pandemic, when we're all sitting around at home, and I'm not the world's greatest sleeper, so I was awake in the middle of the night many times. But I got into really listening to podcasts and enjoyed them so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember as a kid in Wales, we didn't have a TV, so we listened to the radio all the time. And the BBC used to do great radio plays and so on back when. So it reminded me, radio is a wonderful medium. But of course, YouTube's coming into its own too, so that is as well. But yeah, I think this is a time for alternative media too.
Yeah,
with a decline in corporate media, so that's something that is really that really interests me. And I've been too busy getting the new center launched to really focus on that. But in the new year or in the fall, I want to really see if I can really develop that.
All right. Well, let's talk when you get back from your conference.
Yeah, because, I did a radio show, a weekly radio show on WBAI, a sponsored radio station in New York for 5 or 6 years, and I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, by all means, let's talk some when I get back, because that's really of interest to me.
So I just want to briefly touch upon, we've got a few minutes left, but something you said, which I think is so important, which I know a lot of people I work with and talk with kind of feel the same way, is there's a lot of this, as you put it, regressive energy around right now. It does feel in some ways like we're going backwards, that the world is getting more tribal, more authoritarian. What can people do as individuals to kind of combat that, or to just hold their own sovereignty in the face of this extreme polarization and extreme authoritarianism that appears to be developing around the world?
Well, I think one way is to take a view of what it is, what's going on right now. You know, Rudolf Steiner said back in 1919, in the aftermath of the First World War, that regressive powers, retrograde powers, spiritual impulses taking us backwards would inevitably arise in the 20th century and in the new millennium. And he identified four of them, actually, which I think are right on. And he said, look, these are spiritual challenges for humanity that we have to overcome. So it's part of the evolution or awakening of humanity. We have to overcome it. So rather than just throwing our hands up in despair and saying, oh, these ugly, fascistic, horrible, you know, the attempt to destroy alternative energy, for instance. I mean,
yeah,
so ridiculous. It's so obviously regressive. But if we see it as something that we simply have to deal with, we don't want to lose faith.
Mm-hmm.
Want to lose our own centeredness. I mean, those, let me just give you those four different things that start towards to. First of all, he said grotesque forms of nationalism and tribalism. Well, this is before the Nazis. This is in 1919. He said what he called, with his tongue in his cheek, I think, the superstition of scientific materialism. He talked about religious fundamentalism. And what was the fourth? I'm not thinking of the fourth right now, but yeah, fundamentalism, nationalism. And the fourth was the primacy of economic values in all spheres. Think of, you know, neoliberal global capitalism that puts a price on everything and knows the value of nothing.
Yes.
So you see it. You can see that the whole fundamental, I don't care whether it's Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever it is, it's always a regressive force. And you see the power of global capitalism, should we say, where everything is reduced to money and profit. And you see that still in the academic world and so much of the mainstream, materialism is the predominant worldview. There is no level of there is nothing beyond just this physical body. So, you know, these are so I think just staying centered, you know, it helps. It's obviously helpful if you have some kind of personal practice, some kind of meditation practice or whatever it is that helps you stay centered. And keep the faith, keep on trucking, do whatever you do, whether you're whatever, you know, because you want to contribute in some way to the evolution of humanity and the evolution of consciousness. So if you can work in green energy or conscious business or, you know, whatever it may be, by all means do it. But it's not time to just give up the fight and go, oh, God, these bastards are just taking over. It's part of if we see dealing with this as part of our spiritual work, that's helpful.
That's why we keep doing what we do at the station and trying to.
Good for you.
Ralph, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. If people want to learn more about the new center, and the program that you offer, where do they go? How do they find you?
They can go to newcenterny.org. That's the main website. The Esoteric Quest is esotericquest.org. And there's also, you know, the we're going to be doing a new Art of Dying training in the new year, so artofdying.org too. Those are three right there. My own personal website, ralphwhite.net, which needs to be updated a bit. I haven't had time to do it, but ralphwhite.net.
All right, wonderful. Well, Ralph, it's been a pleasure to reconnect with you. I wish you all the success in the world with the new center. We'll talk when you come back from your conference to see what we can do to support you and help in that process. I think now is the time for people like you and me to stay connected and to support each other.
That's another point, Sam. In terms of what we can stay connected. There's strength in numbers. We need community, to help us deal with these difficult issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. I really
Thank you, Sam. It
appreciate
was a pleasure.
It.
All the very best.
All right, all the best. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. I truly appreciate you. And don't forget, if you did miss any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc and on all the major podcasting platforms, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Amazon. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can always find the Conscious Consultant Hour. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Branku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.